On this week's show, taking nothing for granted in the crazy battle against the drop from the National League, we speak to Ipswich United CEO Damien Irvine.
Well, we've still got work to do yet, but certainly the change in performance has been welcome.
Two more points for Dartford in their own battle against the drop. We hear from defender Paul Rooney about the new boss, Adrian Pennock.
You can tell we're a lot more solid, and it's obviously the goal doesn't really show the work he's done put in the last 2 weeks, because straight through the middle, it shouldn't really happen.
And could it be three promotions in a row for Chatham Town? Manager Kevin Hake certainly hopes so.
It's been a really quick, fast rate of rise. Steep learning curves for everyone, but we still kept to that. Few players who've been there sort of since day one, which is sort of nice to see.
Hello everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Kent Rowley podcast, sponsored by Sandwich Town Youth FC. It's been another crazy week with lots to dissect. We've got three interviews for you to enjoy, and we will look ahead as well to a huge weekend in every single division that we cover. I'm John Phipps, who underwent a radical transformation in the space of 24 hours earlier this week. Another line now is a man who I was going to say was hoping would be less tired of football this week, but then I remembered the league table. Matt Gerrard, how are you?
Good, mate. Yeah, not too bad. I'm just worried about your 100-day cough, John, because what week are you in now? Or are you in any in week two?
God, well, this is the third week I've been coughing and spluttering through the podcast, and it does make my editing somewhat more difficult when I have to stop every 30 seconds to take out all the coughs. But yeah, it's just been going around for ages, isn't it? And yeah, just can't seem to shift it. Nah, doctors, get a doctor's appointment. You've got to be kidding.
The lady in office, I think she's had it about 4 weeks, and she got some appointment, and she did get some antibiotics the other day. They tried to blame it on her being allergic to her dog at first. So maybe you're allergic to your pets, your cat. That's probably the easy way out, I suppose.
In all seriousness, the NHS here is really poor. So without going too deep into it, my dad's not been very well. And rather than get an appointment at his doctor's, he ended up having to get an appointment at the hospital and going up A&E instead. He had an appointment, thankfully, so he didn't have to wait too long. But they said to him, "Oh, yeah, you've just had COVID, but you're better now." So that was one thing. And then there's other things going on as well. And then today he's phoned his doctors to ask if he can get more a repeat prescription. And they said, "We've got no record of you going to the hospital." I mean, I sometimes feel like the NHS, which is a wonderful organisation, have done some wonderful things, but it sounds to me like these doctors here could probably organise the National League fixtures.
Well, it's not good at the moment. So I saw that survey that said that 24% of the people think it's doing a good job. So unfortunately, it's probably only going to get worse. I would have thought the investment in it, whatever government in, is going to be pretty poor over the next couple of years.
I think the rubbish thing is like literally the doctors are so overflowing now that they're like just using A&E as an extension of the doctors. And that's the worrying thing. And that's why you're getting all these waits and all these people waiting for hours at A&E who aren't actually that ill. Do you know what I mean? It's really difficult. It's really difficult situation. But, you know, full respect to everyone in the NHS. Remember, you know, what, 4 years ago on a Thursday night, we'd be outside clapping for these people to show our support and our solidarity, and now that they're still being treated really badly. So, you know, it's the all that clapping amazingly didn't sort out all their problems. Who'd have thought?
Yes, it's 4 years ago now. That's crazy, isn't it? But a long things have happened in 4 years, and we don't seem to have got anywhere. So unfortunately, that's a bit of politics here, mate. We can get onto that probably next season when the general election's on.
Absolutely. Well, we'll have to do it before the purdah period starts, or else we'll get ourselves in all sorts of trouble, mate. I'll teach you all about that one day. What else you've been up to? It's a funny week again, isn't it? You don't know what sort of coat to wear. You can't wear your thick coat. You can't wear your thin coat. You need a sort of mid-season jacket, don't you?
It was cold this morning. I took the dog out for a spin this evening. That wind was coming. The weather's not been good. What have we been up to? Not a great deal, mate. Nothing again. We're excited for the clocks game back. So that keeps us a bit of thing. We've got clocks forward. Spring forward, full back. Yeah, so. Nothing too exciting, but I've got time off next week and a long weekend. I'm only working one of the bank holiday weekends. So I can enjoy my other one after crying on the one I'm going to.
Absolutely. Yeah, you're right. The weather hasn't stopped. And I guess the worrying thing is that it's not magically going to make the weather better when we go into British summertime, is it? And that's the concerning thing. But I've had a nightmare this week because I left my second residence on Monday morning and forgot my coats. I've now got two coats left in that property, which apparently is going to cost me a foot rub for the looking after them, so I've been told. But I mean, I didn't have a coat yesterday and it was bloody freezing though, and my good old mates at Southeastern were buggering about with the chains, and I'm there 11 o'clock 20 past 11 London Bridge Station last night. I was freezing cold and I didn't have a coat. Nightmare.
As my mum said, in the middle of summer, you should always go somewhere with a coat, mate. So there you go. She'll be upset for that. If anywhere I go, it could be boiling. If you got a coat, she says. So, yeah, always go out with your coat.
Sorry, Mrs. Gerard. It's our 290th episode this week, into the nervous 290s, if you will. And 290 is a sphenic number, a non-totient and a non-cototient. But it's also one of MC Hammer's favourites. Yes, that's right. It's Untouchable. I'm sure the so-say forefather of pop rap was indeed inspired by positive integers that cannot be expressed by the sum of all the proper divisors of any positive integer. I also found an aftershave called 290, which apparently is inspired by the smell of vanilla and tobacco. Surprisingly, it has very good reviews. Maybe it keeps former smokers happy. I mean, would you want a smell of tobacco?
We're having this conversation in the office because people didn't know that you could smoke in pubs because they're so young, some of these people, and coming back out, remember thinking of smoke. I didn't really know a question. I don't go to pubs. Can you vape in pubs?
No, I don't think you can. No.
You can't vape anywhere inside, I take it, these days.
No.
I presume, because if you that vape thing, if it smells of bananas and licorice, your clothes would smell of bananas and licorice, would they?
Possibly. I mean, I haven't thought about that, but no, I've never seen anyone vaping inside.
You're not allowed to do that then.
No.
Do you know many people who vape? That seems to be the in thing.
Do you know what? I don't really.
Work colleagues?
I think there's a couple of work colleagues who do. But yeah, I mean, my dad's given up smoking, so I don't even really know anyone who smokes. I think smoking is something that seems to go around in waves. Some years it's cool, other years it's not. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes it seems everyone wants to be doing it, and then everyone is not. I've got a bit of a theory. I think that it tends to be generational. I think that people who have had parents who smoke don't want to do it at all. And then I think it sort of goes the other way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that seems to be the consensus, I think. But it's not cool to smoke, I think my kids say, but it is cool to vape. That seems to be the big thing.
And I think that might be even bloody worse, don't they? That's the thing.
Well, exactly. So, yeah. But why would I want to smell of bananas and licorice or taste bananas and licorice? I presume that's what you're tasting.
Who knows? I've never tried it, thankfully. So I can proudly wear that badge of honour, and I can't see it happening anytime soon. It's not every football podcast that mentions MC Hammer and smoking in the first 10 minutes, is it?
You can't touch this, mate.
No, you really can't. Let's get on with the show then. And we're going to start at the very top of the pyramid, where Ebbsfleet United's battle against the drop is into the final few furlongs. After running away with the National League South last season, it's been a tough return to the top tier of non-league for the Fleet. And in January, they sacked manager Dennis Katrine. Replacement Danny Searle's coming in, overseeing a turnaround in form. They are top of the form table. And as we're about to hear, no one at the Cufflinks Stadium is taking anything for granted. There was no action on Saturday for the Fleet, though, as their game with Halifax was called off less than an hour before kickoff in West Yorkshire. And when I caught up with Fleet CEO and friend of the show, Damien Irvine, that postponement was our first topic of conversation.
It was. It was very, and the most frustrating thing, John, was it was highly avoidable. I think, you know, we as a club obviously, you know, saw that there were issues on Wednesday night with the pitch there when Chesterfield visited. We saw a forecast which showed rain about on Friday evening. So we contacted Halifax, you know, proactively and said, look, perhaps these are our travel times on Friday. There's also a large supporter contingent going up for the weekend. These are their travel times. If there's a chance, and we included the match officials in this and said, can we have an indicative pitch inspection on Friday morning before anyone travels, just to get a gauge, and then we can make an informed decision and let everyone know what the likelihood is of a game going on or not. But, you know, we were told that it was blue skies, the pitch is in great condition, and they had no concerns. So we were frustrated on Saturday morning to get a call saying that a precautionary pitch inspection will take place at 11. When we arrived there at 10:30, it was clear that the pitch couldn't have been ready on Friday or that morning. The groundsman was on his own there. No one was from Halifax was there. He was working away on it. And the match official said, well, because he's draining, there's no further rain. For those that are already up here and travelled, the team and the supporters will try and get it on. And then, unfortunately, the 1:30 pitch inspection turned into a 10 past 2 because the match official didn't arrive at the ground until 2 o'clock. So, all in all, a very, very frustrating day. And we didn't get a game away. And now the last game of the last week of the season is likely to 4 matches in 7 days for us, which is not really fair on a club who tries to get their games on. And, we really, really feel that it's going to be a tough week. But we have to take the medicine we've got and we'll just get by.
We've seen this a few times this season where games have been called off all up and down the pyramid involving our teams. I think we had Dartford down at Truro. We've had Sittingbourne going to Littlehampton. What do you think is the best solution? I'm guessing early pitch inspections, yeah?
Yes and no. Look, I understand the need for early inspections, but I think early call-offs, we all have to try and do our best and give games as much time as we possibly can to get them on. I fully appreciate that. The big thing is, John, is you've got to be transparent about it. And an early pitch inspection, if that says, and we tell all the supporters, we give everyone information, supporters are grown-ups, they know what's going on, they can make value judgments on their own risk versus reward. And if they choose to go to the expense knowing that, you know, a club on the wet Friday morning had said, look, there's probably a 30% chance of this game going ahead, by the way, we'll try and get it on, but it's looking unlikely. Our supporters or Dartford supporters, whoever's looking to travel, can make that value judgment. If they want to risk their weekend and their expense to go and do it, I'm okay with that, because then, you know, we've got all the information at hand. I just think transparency is the key. And if we say, look, it's unlikely to be on, but you know, please come if you feel like it, but, you know, we're really sorry if it doesn't go ahead. I think the issue with Halifax was, you know, and they did it, they announced a late pitch inspection on the Wednesday as well, by the way, for Chesterfield fans after tickets had gone off sale. I think clubs are loath to put out early notice of potential adverse conditions because they feel it might affect their gate. Well, it will, but it's not the supporters' fault. And I just think we have to be far more transparent and honest when we're doing these inspections.
And I guess as well as having to play 4 games in 7 days within the season, there's got to be a financial impact on the club as well, hasn't there?
Yeah, I mean, that was an overnight stay for us and a team coach. There was 2 supporters coaches went up, and it does affect. I mean, at the start of the season, you budget for which overnight games you're doing, and we do it as cost effectively as we can, John, but you're talking, that's a £5,000 to £6,000 exercise. And that's money you have to find to do it a second time. It does have a big impact, but that's part of being in a professional league as well. You have to factor that in, but it's disappointing.
Looking generally at the season, have you ever known a bottom of the table like this?
Never. Never seen it this compact, and I've also never seen it so competitive and even. I know that sounds ridiculous, given Chesterfield are a runaway champions, and rightly so. Fully deserved after the playoff final last year, which I thought they were the better side in, but they rebounded beautifully. But even still, they had no guarantee of winning their last few games. Any team, as we saw all last weekend, teams at all ends of the table can beat anyone in the position. It's a very, very even National League competition, and it's exciting. It doesn't do you sleep any good when you run into a club, but it's a great competition.
And obviously you made, or the decision was made a few months ago now to make a change of manager. And I guess the results have shown that was the right thing to do.
Well, we've still got work to do yet. But certainly the change in performance has been welcome. And look, as hard as decision-making is around making a change, the best you can hope for in doing that is taking everything into account, all the variables, is that you get you get the right result from it. To go through all the heartache, the personal pain and sacrifice from former managers and the people at the club that have got to make those decisions. I think you want to get a result. Full credit to everyone involved in that it has gone the right way. But I think if you were to say that it's been worthwhile, it won't be until we know the result for the end of the season. And we're still really only just started the run in. We need to continue the trajectory. I think when you look at the results we've had and you look at still how tight it is and how much jeopardy still exists, well, you hate to think the position we'd have been in if we hadn't changed our results and our destiny.
But from the tone of your voice there, I'm guessing it was a very, very hard decision to part with Dennis.
Oh, very much so. I think we made that clear at the time. But we're a club that everyone knows each other very well. We see each other every day, and he did an excellent job coming out of his comfort zone at home in Berlin. I think probably one of the best managerial performances we've seen in the South for many years, and maybe for many to come. And so it was very, very tough on a personal level, on a professional level, and I think everyone in the club, all the supporters, are very cognizant of that and have got a great place in their hearts and in our history for what Dennis and Chris, his assistant, delivered here for us. So anytime you make that decision to part company, it does hurt. Yeah, it's painful for everyone involved, and also then the bounce that's come. It's not easy because, you know, you're always wondering what ifs, but at the end of the day, we're here tasked to make decisions, John. You've got to make decisions and you've got to do what's best for the club and the playing group and everything at the time. And for no other reason other than results weren't turning and hadn't for a long time, and everyone was tired. It was becoming such a frustrating time because so many people, Dennis, everyone included, were working so hard with the best of intent, but we just couldn't change our luck, and the performances, that energy was being sapped daily, and so it was the right decision in that regard.
Big game on Good Friday against a Southend side who, if it wasn't for their points deduction, would be in the playoff places now.
Absolutely massive, and this is what it's all about. It's great for football at the level, great for non-league football. Justin's done a great job since he's gone in there at Southend with his consortium and their supporters. They've been ever so good to our supporters over the years. They're part and parcel of the family, the football family, and we're so pleased, and I know our supporters are so pleased to be welcoming them for the first time in a competitive match, funnily enough, after all these years, and they're enjoying a bigger bounce than we are, given the whole club was at risk not so long ago, and bringing a huge contingent, our supporters are buying up tickets to match that or better that as well. And it's just it's a really proper good Easter fixture, and it'll be very, very tough. They were absolutely on fire last night, and they've been excellent. And yeah, that points deduction has hurt them, but they're still not out of the playoff hope either, by the way. So really exciting.
But what sort of challenges does hosting a big game like this have behind the scenes compared to National League South matches?
Yeah, look, first and foremost, safety and comfort for the supporters that pay good money to come to the games is the first of our priorities, John. So we've been working with local authorities, police and things for quite a few weeks on this, months even, in preparation. Fans have done their bit by pre-ordering and pre-purchasing. The South End fans have particularly to sell their allocation out nice and early, which makes planning easy. We're bringing in extra facilities in terms of portable bathroom facilities and extra food and beverage to make it as comfortable as we can for them, but there's the, you know, and our own supporters as well. I mean, that's all about safety and ease, and I'm a firm believer that the better you look after travelling supporters and thank them for their huge support, because financially it's a nice fillip for the club to have a sold out away, and the better you look after them and show respect for that, I'm a big believer that safety wise and behaviour wise that's repaid. And we're looking forward to that on Friday.
And have you got or is there a target in mind of how many points you're going to need, or is it just literally get as many points as you can between now and the end of the season?
I don't think anyone, hand on heart, can pick a number, actually, if I'm honest, John. I mean, mathematically, you've looked at previous years, and that, I think, as you mentioned at the start, this year is so unusual that I think previous year precedents can go out the window. I think you probably agree with that. So it's too difficult to say. We've got a job to do. We need to still win some football games. And, I think anyone can put a run on this time of year and get out of trouble. I think we've shown that. I think Kidderminster has shown that before us. Fylde have shown that. Woking have shown that at different times. And I think we'd be naive to sit here and say that there won't be other clubs that will contribute and have a little run as well between now and the end of the season. So, no, I wouldn't like to hang a number on it. The key is, and Denny's done a great job in keeping everyone's heads firmly fixed in terms of just worrying about our own performances. And there's enough games for us to get enough points, and that's what matters.
I suppose having been relegated before by 0 point, whatever it was of a point, you know all about that. But just finally, yeah. Plans for the new stadium still going strong?
Yeah, so we've got a planning date, April 10th, which is the council's planning committee have given us that. So very much at the pointy end of that process, mate. And we haven't had said a lot about it in the last year or so because, you know, there's so much paperwork and things to go ahead with and waiting on council decisions. But we've got a date for that. And so hopefully after April 10th, we'll have something that we can inform you about.
Nice to catch up with Damien as always, Matt. And I thought he was on really good form there, but he knows there's still work to do for Fleet in this insane battle at the foot of the table.
Yeah, I think they're in a good position, though. I think Damien, I have to say, he comes across really well. How he, you know, a proper CEO runs that club, respected, I think, across the leagues, respected in the county as well. So I appreciate his time coming on because he's probably a very busy man. Yeah. It's still quite tight, very tight down the bottom, mentally tight. So Southend, some big games. But I still think Ebbsfleet have got games in hand on some of the sides. So the appointment of Danny Sells done a good job. Interesting, he was quite emotional about losing Dennis Cattree, but he's got the thoughts of the football club in his mindset, really. So, yeah, really good. I think that they're having a good season, Ebbsfleet. Probably thought they'd be higher, but looking at the league, clearly it's a very, very even league. So no outstanding team apart from probably Bromley. Chesterfield, get me with teeth in from there. So, yeah, interesting interview there. And I think get through this season, stay up, and then Ebbsfleet can build from there because I think they'll always be able to attract a good players with the budget they've got.
I didn't realise how good Ebbsfleet's form had been, actually, Matt. One defeat in eight, which was that loss at Aldershot. They've been scoring goals. You know, they've had a 3-0 win, a 4-1 win, a 4-2 win. Even drew 2-2 with Chesterfield as well. They've really turned it round. And in, as I say, in the six-match form table, they are top. They're the team that were supposed to play on Saturday, Halifax, are second. But what a great job they've done. And it was obviously a really hard decision to sack Dennis Cattree. But at the moment, you've got to say it's paying off.
I think he's done it's Danny Sell. Again, I think it went a little bit wrong at Aldershot, and maybe they didn't think he could take him to the next level. But I think he's a solid manager who's worked within the leagues, a good coach. When Dennis Cattree was sacked, would I thought Danny Sell was going to get the job? Probably not. But clearly, he came in pretty quickly, didn't he? So they must have thought about what he could do from there. So I think it's a good appointment, and I think they've got a good chance of going forward, I think, really. So to be successful, just get through this season. Again, they've got enough games, and I think they've got enough quality, particularly in the attacking threat with Polion. Bingham, who's a lovely player as well, they should have enough. Again, they might bring somebody in before the start of the season, you never know, before the end of the transfer deadline, which is tomorrow as well. So interesting times ahead. Yes.
Yeah, as I said to him, they're sort of tongue in cheek within. They got relegated by such a small margin last time, so they know they've got to get over the line. If people don't remember, they were relegated in the COVID season. It was cut short on points per game, and it was so marginal with how they actually ended up going down. But, you know, they will know that they've got to do the job and get over the line. But at the moment, with the form that they're in, the confidence in those players must be absolutely sky high.
Yeah, I think Danny Sell's given them that confidence as well, because we saw from Ebbsfleet, they played the way they wanted to play. Maybe he's mixed it up a little bit to be successful and got in. A new manager bounce we've hasn't seen for certain clubs, but it has definitely worked for Ebbsfleet. So, again, and he mentioned about the ground there. Good time to be an Ebbsfleet fan, I think, if they can keep in this division. And again, I'm thinking next season, what we thought this season could be quite open, apart from Chesterfield running away with it, next season could be the season that really is open as well, with the likely sides to come down. It could be an exciting year next year if you get it right in the transfer market and have a good start to the season.
Yeah, and talking about that game at Halifax on Saturday, I think he's got a fair point there. You know, I thought it was really interesting when he said, you know, if they told us that given us the sort of percentage of the chance of the game being on, then, you know, we've still got to travel, but our supporters can make an informed decision. If you were an Ipswich supporter and you made it all the way up to Halifax on Saturday, if you, that game to be called off, you would have been furious. And I know a lot of people were really annoyed with that whole scenario. But actually, I thought Damien spoke very well about that, because ultimately we want games of football to be played. If there's a chance it can be played, then we want it played. But you've also got to consider the distances involved, because it's not a short little hop from Halifax to Ebbsfleet, is it?
No. And again, it seems to be a thing. Why couldn't they get that to wait till the referee turned up at 10 past two? Surely somebody else can look at this and do it. So I think the league needs to have a plan of this. Maybe tell clubs, if you've got problems, try and get a local referee. It doesn't need to be one that's still reffing, but a ref who's been in the game surely could help this out. So, I feel a bit sorry for them from there. It does seem pretty farcical. Clearly, having a pitching section at 11:30, when you'd have to leave a little bit earlier, I think, yeah, clubs need to sort this out. Certain clubs do it really well and certain clubs don't. So, yeah, it is a strange one, but and I do feel for them there, because that's not good. And £6,000 is a lot of money to, you know, to basically waste. And I don't know if the league compensates them, but the league should have a think about this. They need to get this right, because we've been talking about this every year, and I'm sure this time next year we'll be talking about it again.
Well, we've certainly had a few incidents where you've probably been at the ground when the games have been called off, Matt.
Yeah, I have been. Yeah. Again, present club as well, we're not doing particularly well, so on that basis. So.
And obviously, Ebbsfleet United, you know, as you said about the stadium there as well, a big game for them on Friday. And again, I thought, you know, showing respect to Southend and saying, you know, if we make a nice experience for them, then they'll want to thrive in it and they'll behave themselves. So, you know, I think that's a fair way of looking at it as well.
Again, clearly, Ebbsfleet have gotten things right off the pitch as well. Well, I think when Southend probably turned up, I think it'd be about 2,000 today or so. They might even bring more to Ebbsfleet when they're doing quite well, or could get in the playoffs this season. Giving them a little bit of respect, giving them more than one toilet, giving them more than food. Again, it works both ways. If you're respectful to clubs will be respectful to you.
Absolutely. I suppose we'll just finish this little section on Ebbsfleet with the killer question, Matt. Are they going to stay up?
Looking at that league table, I think they will do. I'm thinking Dorking are going to go. Oxford already gone. I think Maidenhead have probably had a time. I think Ebbsfleet have got enough to stay up. And I think next season could be an interesting summer and an interesting season for them, for a lot of clubs in that National League. I think staying up this one season will be classed as a success. And then you can really chance to build next season. So I think Ebbsfleet have got enough yet to stay up.
Just run through that table. So Oxford City are relegated, as Matt has already said. Dorking got 42 from 40. Then Kidderminster 43 from 41. Boreham Wood 44 from 40. Maidenhead 45 from 40 are the team outside the drop zone. Then you've got York with 46 from 41. Eastleigh 47 from 40. Ebbsfleet 47 from 39. Wealdstone 47 from 38. Woking 48 from 41. Hartlepool 49 from 40, and they lost 7-1 on Tuesday night. Fylde 49 from 41, look where they were 6 weeks ago. Dagenham Redbridge 50 points from 41 games. That takes you up to 12th in this ridiculous table. And any three of those teams could conceivably go down from here. It is absolutely fascinating what has gone on at the foot of that table there. But I think Ebbsfleet have got enough. I think they've got a bit of form. They're looking good, and they'll have confidence. I think that's a massive thing as you go into this business end of the season. And I'm sure in Danny Searle, they've got a man who'll do everything that he can to stay in this division, which is something he knows how to do very well.
It'd be interesting to see if, like for Boreham Wood, all that money they get from Arsenal, surprised they're going down in there. Interesting to see if they go. So some surprise clubs struggling this season, I think, as well. So it's interesting.
Yeah, it really is. I suppose because it is a level playing field, that division. That's why some teams have got sucked into it who you might have expected to be near the other end. But who knows? Bromley didn't help the Ebbsfleet cause on Saturday as they were beaten 2-0 at home by York City. And with six games left to play, they'll just need a slight improvement in their form in order to secure that all-important home playoff berth. They head to struggling Dorking on Good Friday, when, as we've already heard, Ebbsfleet entertain Southend. Before on Monday, Fleet go to Dagenham, while Bromley host another struggler in Woking. And while Ebbsfleet are desperate not to be in National League South next season, our other two interviews this week are both hoping to be competing in that second tier next season. First up, let's hear from a man who's battling to stay in that division. Matt was at Dartford on Saturday with former boss Alan Dowson's Hemel Hempstead earn a 1-1 draw at Prince's Park. The Darts would follow that up with another draw, making it eight games without a win at Truro on Tuesday night, a point which at least lifted them out of the drop zone. So even though they've played since that chat, the result of Gloucester means it's still relevant to hear from Saturday's man of the match and the Darts goal scorer Paul Rooney speaking to Matt.
It's a game we should be winning. And it's just sort of similar theme happening throughout the season, just conceding a sloppy goal when we're on top. And also not taking our chances. Like, we've got to take our chances if we want to stay up, and hopefully we can kick on. We'll take a point as a positive and then kick on. Hopefully we can win on Tuesday.
Yeah, the results haven't been going well since the new manager's come in. It's a strange one as well, with Alan Dowson being in the opposite dugout as well today. What's the new manager brought into the club?
Yeah, no, he's brought in a lot, to be fair. He's obviously seen a couple of games before, he said, and watched us, and he's brought in a few players, and you tell we're a lot more solid. And it's obviously the goal doesn't really show the work he's done put in the last 2 weeks, because straight through the middle, shouldn't really happen. But defo better for it anyway, and you can see on board already what we've done, like bits of play and stuff like that going forward, and so hopefully it works for the next couple of games, and then we can get a few wins.
Talking about you, he told you to get forward for the goal, and it was a tidy finish from the edge of the penalty. The ball fell nicely for you.
It dropped nicely for me, and I was able to just do a little shimmy and slot it in the corner. But I was just speaking to Dowse there, and he said he was giving out to them, saying I was the only threat. And I said, if he never said that, I would have probably never scored. So thank God he did say that. But it was good to get a goal. I just thought it brought a bit of momentum, and we could have kicked on from there, but it just wasn't meant to be.
Again, results have gone. A lot of teams have lost around you. You've gained one more point on it. You've got a big week coming up, Easter coming up, away at Truro, away at Chelmsford, and Eastbourne come here now. Yeah. So is there enough quality and confidence in the camp?
Yeah, definitely. Especially, it's good that we have the manager in. He's nice and cool. Like, we went the goal down there. Half time, he's come in. He hasn't bollocked anyone because we were on top. He just said, lads, you can score in the 91st minute. It keeps us calm, and we'll need that for them games coming up. And I think every game's winnable. I think it's just we need to get the rub of the green. People say, like, oh, you can't keep saying the rub of the green. But if you've seen just before I scored there, it was like ping pong in the box. And that's
you could have scored that before that one.
Could have scored that before. And that's what I'm saying. Like, that's happened weeks and weeks and weeks. And then we just need to put the ball in the back of the net, and that'll be it. And hopefully we can do that Tuesday, Friday and Monday, and it's a lot of, we have a nice squad. You see the boys that didn't play and played against Maidstone again on Tuesday. It was a quality game. You can see what the gaffer's done with them, and like, some of them can come in and it strengthens the team, and there's a lot of quality in there to get the points that we need to stay up.
Small margins at this time of the season, chances go in, chances don't go in, isn't it? You just got to make sure that the ball goes in your favour.
Yeah, it's like small margins all over the season. Like, you can look back to own goals in the 90th minute, and you can go back to right at the start of the season, 90 minute conceding the first day of the season. So it's just we've got to tighten up and hopefully keep a few clean sheets and score goals. It's what we need to do to win games.
Message to the fans: do you think you can stay up?
Yeah, definitely. We just need them to stay with us, stick with us, and we just need their support, and the lads are giving it their all, and there is enough quality in there to stay up. So,
as I've just said, Matt, they're out of the bottom four, albeit they're ahead of a team with four games in hand on them. But you've seen them again. How worried are you for the Darts?
I'd worry where the goals come from. That would be my biggest concern. Defensively, they look pretty solid. Hemel, was a fair result on Saturday, I thought. Again, it wasn't the greatest game I've seen in a while, to be honest. I think Hemel were lacking confidence. The problem is, Dartford have got either teams at the top of the table or teams basically around them. So they've got nobody in the middle. So each game is going to be absolutely massive. My concern is, where are the goals are going to come from?
I think your message to me on Saturday after the game just kind of summed up. You just said they're a bit meh.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing, that there's no one exciting to get you out of your seat. There's no one really who's going to bang in those goals and give you some confidence and some excitement that things are going to turn around.
Yeah, it's quite nervy as well. I felt that the fans are a little bit nervous that they were in this position. They played okay, but there's nothing in the side team to excite you, as in, you know, are they going to score enough goals to stay up? They've got some tough games. They've got to go to Chelmsford and Yeovil coming up as well. So sides at the top end of the table looked a bit more solid, but when it comes to the crunch, when they're going to have to go to games to win matches, have they got quality in the final third? They got Ollie Bray, they brought in from Aldershot on loan, brought a few players in on loan, and the keeper looked decent and the fullback looked solid as well. But I think Ollie Bray, I think he must have touched the ball about three times in the second half. It was in the commentary that, you know, he was an Alfie Pavey lookalike, same haircut, frame running style. I thought, all right, he's going to be down the middle, but he was sort of played on the wing and didn't really get involved too much in the game. So he's got a good record at lower non-league level, but playing him out on the wing didn't really work. But I would be concerned, again, and I'm sure Ady Pennant might be again, transfer deadline tomorrow, looking to bring a striker in. Where are they had no strikers on the bench, got no, apart from Wall and Bray, I think that's it. So that would be my concern. Where are the goals coming from when it crunched, when they need it? But Ady Pennant seems pretty confident we'll get out of it. We did hear rumours that Taunton will lose points as well for an ineligible player. I don't know if you've heard anything about that, have you?
I've not heard that one, no. That's a good one.
So that was the rumour going around. First of all, we thought it was Torquay, but it wasn't. Is that Taunton will lose points. And there is a feeling that Taunton may want to go down and as well because of the problems they've got. But that's, again, you can't rely on that Dartford perspective to do that. So we'll have to watch the space because they've got so many games to catch up themselves in Truro. But yeah, solid, but not spectacular going forward will be my main thing from there.
I thought Paul Rowling spoke quite well there and you know, said that Ady Pennant has kind of made it clear what the expectations are and isn't putting too much pressure on them. Having spoken to Ady Pennant as well, how do you think he's finding it so far?
I think he's enjoying it. In Brunei, maybe it's not the passion and different football fans from there and basically in-your-face attitude that he needs to get out of this division. So I think he's enjoying it. I think he's enjoying it at a club like Dartford, who are a well-run club. So he just wants to get results his way. If he keeps them up, he'll keep the job. I'm absolutely certain of that. If they go down, Dartford will have a decision to make. But I think Ady Pennant is a good manager who can sort of galvanise the club a little bit. So interesting times ahead for the Darts, but some tough games ahead coming up for them. So particularly on Friday against Chelmsford, and there's no love lost between the two clubs there.
No, Chelmsford like a late goal at Prince's Park, if I remember rightly, don't they?
Yeah. Look, there's always a bit of niggle between them. I think there was even a bit of rumbles on and off the pitch when they played before. So it'd be interesting one, that one. So, yeah. I'd be just a little bit concerned for Dartford, but I'm more concerned. If they all had to take the same amount of games, think they get out of it, there is concerning that these other teams have got the games in hand and they will pick up points from those games.
Yeah. At half-time on Saturday, Dover's relegation was going to be confirmed, but results elsewhere meant that the Whites lived to fight another day despite their 3-1 loss to Farnborough. It would have been quite fitting, though, actually, had that half-time score been decisive, as the goal that gave Borough that lead was scored by Ricky Holmes, who, as you may remember, was very briefly Dover's assistant manager in the summer. I suppose, Matt, if you look at it, the season started off pretty farcically with all of that, and it's just never got better from there, has it?
No, it hasn't been. Again, certain things I'm hearing as well over when I'm in the summer, you know, aren't really get involved in. But you think, oh my goodness. So yeah, we're going down. I'm going to the relegation party on Friday against Welling United. So it just put us out of our misery, really. But it'll be nice to finally see us win in this season if it happens. But again. Jake LaBelle, the manager, I say I've got a lot of faith in Jake. As he said before, it's men against boys, really. And Dover need to have a look at that and see what they're going to do next season because they need a little bit of experience, got it? But
I guess the difficult thing is that probably the budget that you've got now probably wouldn't be that competitive in the Isthmian Premier either. And I suppose that's where it's difficult because, you know, the leagues below are getting stronger. And I would worry for Dover if they don't sign well and if they don't have a good start. But maybe we'll worry about that one next season, shall we?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, where the club, what's the budget going to be? They need a plan. We said this last week. You got a plan. Right. Let's have a 5-year plan to get back in the National League and maybe National League South, sorry, not National League, and try and look to get in the top 10 playoffs like that. But there's nothing coming from the club at all of what they're willing to do, what's going to happen next season. So it's just a little bit concerning.
Yes. Elsewhere on Saturday, Maidstone solidified their place in the playoff spots with a 1-0 win over Western Supermare. Tunbridge Angels left it late before seeing off Truro 2-1. And Wellingham still having to look over their shoulders at the bottom four after they lost 4-1 at Chippenham in a game that was delayed because of more traffic troubles. Handy for the Wings, though, they host Dover on Friday when Dartford travel to Chelmsford. Maidstone are just down the road from me at Eastbourne Borough and Tunbridge Angels head to Hampton Richmond Borough. Before on Monday, it's Dartford against Eastbourne in a big game at the bottom. Dover at home to Chelmsford. Maidstone meet Welling and Tunbridge Angels are at home to Farnborough, and Maidstone are in action again on Wednesday night as they head to Taunton. As we say, it's all coming thick and fast, and Taunton are going to be
weather permitting, mate, that one.
Well, absolutely. Taunton are going to be playing every day, I think, come the last 2 weeks of the season at this rate, because they're still having problems with the pitch there, aren't they? So, but yeah, a big weekend to come. I'm sure when we speak to you next, things will all be a lot clearer. Our final interview of this week comes from the top of the Isthmian Premier, where Chatham Town are chasing a third successive promotion. A title is probably going to be out of their reach over the weekend, with Hornchurch on the brink of securing it. But the playoffs and probably second spot are very much on the horizon. They beat Haringey 2-1 on Saturday, and that win was my first question to the Chats boss, Kevin Hake.
Yeah, it's always nice at this stage of the season, John, to get 3 points. I don't think by any means we was at our best, but we'll take the 3 points all day long.
How hard has it been the last few weeks when you've got Hornchurch running away with it in front of you and you've got quite a nice cushion in second to sort of keep the motivation, I guess?
Yeah, it's difficult, you know, because it's a long, hard season. And, to get the boys to keep getting up for it every single time is difficult, especially with, you know, with the point gap. That Hornchurch have been magnificent, deserve the title, and it's hard to keep the boys motivated. But to be fair, they've gone and done that, and whilst the performances I think could be better, at least we're picking up the 3 points, which is good.
I suppose you just want to be in winning form, because there's going to be probably a couple of games come the end of the month or the end of next month that you're going to be winning those two games, and you could be looking at another promotion.
Yeah, I mean, it would. To think of it at the start of the season is almost sort of inconceivable, you know. There's certain sort of targets you want to put in place, like finishing, you know, well, first of all, not get relegated. Secondly, you want to finish above sort of season, you know, teams at this level. And, you know, we've done that. And, you know, then you start to look at, can we make the playoffs? Then you're thinking, can we win the playoffs or can we win the league? And, you know, we're still, you know, effectively in sort of two competitions, if you class the playoff win as a competition and in a cup final as well. So, no, overall, it's been a good season, but it's just really down to the next 6 weeks of how good a season it's actually been.
I mean, it's been an unbelievable ride for you, hasn't it? The last few years, obviously, coming up from the scaffold straight through the Isthmian South East and now flying high in the Isthmian Premier.
Yeah, no, it's been a really quick, fast rate of rise. Steep learning curves for everyone, and, you know, quite fast turnovers, you know, but we still kept to our, you know, integral, you know, few players who've been there sort of since day one, which is sort of nice to see, which sort of keeps the DNA of what Chatham's all about, really.
And the crowds continue to grow and grow as well?
Yeah, I think it's 1,600 or something now, you know, which is, you know, unbelievable that, you know, Haringey on Saturday didn't bring too many. They was in good voice, the ones that was there, though, to be fair, but there was, you know, there was probably 30 supporters they bought, and the rest of them were all Chatham fans, which was great to see.
I heard you on the radio the other week saying it's been frustrating when it comes to the crowds, that often you're at home the same time as Gillingham, and you think that kind of has an effect on the number of people that are coming to watch you?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's, you know, Medway fans, it seems to be quite unique. Medway Maidstone, that doesn't mix, but Medway fans tend to sort of get behind each other, which is sort of quite a nice thing. So you get quite a lot of fans who sort of travel to Gillingham, and they'll travel to sort of Chatham as well. So No, it's really good. So certainly, if it was on opposing Saturdays or midweek, it would be good. But we just sort of went through quite a bad run. I think, you know, when Jules were at home to Wrexham, where they had a full house, but we got over 2,000 that day, which was great. You know, so it's proved there's enough to sort of go around. But you know, obviously, I think it would help attendances both sides if we wasn't sort of competing against each other.
And of course, for Jules fans, you've got a couple of old Jules strikers still turning it on for you. So Danny Kedwell was man of the match and at the weekend, and Chris Dixon as well.
Yeah, they've been great for us. I think I've said before, you know, the experience and the attitude that these guys bring is sort of second to none. So you put that around the youngsters that we've got, it's a nice blend.
You got Cray Wanderers away on Friday, and I think you need, what, 3 more points and you're assured of the playoffs. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm not really sort of looking too much at that. You know, we want to achieve, get as high as what we can. And, you know, we've got some difficult, you know, it's difficult to go from Friday to Monday and then, you know, straight into Hornchurch away, you know, on Saturday as well. It's a difficult run of games. We just want to look at, you know, you want to look at the next one and then keep an eye on the one after. But the main focus is just, you know, picking the 3 points and just keep grinding it out. That's what it's been over the course of the season. It's been a long sort of hard slog, as it is every season, and you just got to keep grinding it out.
From a manager's point of view now, do you, at the stage where, when you're looking at picking your teams and stuff, where you're sort of resting some players here and there to try and keep them as fresh as you can for the cup final and the playoffs?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we look at it, you know, we've got a good, you know, backroom team who sort of assess the players on a, you know, basically a traffic light system on how they are on fitness and how they are potentially to get prone. Obviously, the more and more back-to-back games you get, the more and more in the red zone you sort of get. I mean, we take a selective risk. Generally, we've been pretty good on injuries, you know, this year. We're running with a large squad for that reason alone. John, we're trying to challenge on as many fronts as we can. We went, you know, we had a long, you know, went out in the cup semi-finals last week against Ebbsfleet, so that was another long run in a competition. So it's important to try and keep everyone happy as well. But yeah, I'd be lying if you're saying you're not looking forward to a cup final. Who doesn't, you know? But we want to focus on the task in hand before that. We've got, I think, 4 games to play before then. So I'm focused a bit on that.
With that cup semi-final defeat against Ebbsfleet, I saw the scoreline. I was like, even when you lose, it's entertaining. You've scored more than 100 goals this season. It must be great fun for you to be involved in that.
Not involved in a defeat. It wasn't that much fun. But no, I don't. The first thing I say to the boys is, you know, you've got to put effort in because that's what we expect. But I also want them to go and entertain. And I don't like being bored at games. And I'll tell them so, you know, that I want to entertain as much me, but more so the fans, and playing an entertaining brand of football is really really crucial, because I think the Chats fans, that's what they want. That's what they want to see. Yes, you want to see victories, but everyone went away from Tuesday night's game just, you know, knowing that they'd been in a game, and it was a really entertaining one to see. And unfortunately, we was on the wrong end of a 5-3 scoreline, but yeah, they certainly got their value for money that night, which was good.
And I know, just finally, you're very ambitious in what you think Chatham Town can do. Is it going better than you thought it would?
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly ahead of schedule, you know, from where we need to be. I mean, it's a shame about the COVID years, because we could have been a little bit more accelerated to where we currently find ourselves. But no, to be, you know, in the mix of the playoff places and challenging is fantastic. And it's testament to, you know, the off-field team at the club, and also all the players on it who've got a willingness to learn and a willingness to be ruthless and move on and just really challenge themselves. So, you know, fair play to everyone involved, really.
And it could just be another amazing 6 weeks to be involved in Chatham Town, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's certainly going to be an exciting one, sort of either way, but hopefully we can bring some silverware back to the Bowville. That's the intention.
As I said to him there, Matt, it's been an incredible 3 years for the Chats. And it could get even better over the next month or so, couldn't it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Yeah. Interesting point he said as well, I thought, in there. He said, well, if we didn't have COVID, he said, it where they are, he thought they could even be higher. But I think we spoke to him before, and he thinks they could be a National League side. Great season they're having here with a mixture of experience and youth. Just got in the habit of winning football matches. To be honest, I didn't expect them to be doing so well this season. But with the crowds and with Kevin in charge, when I went there, very friendly, very community-based, just sort of doing very well. And I think they're having a great season. And it's going to be difficult the next six games or so because you're not going to win the league. Right, just keep players ticking over and then go from there. So some decent sides in the top of that table, Enfield, Wingate and Finchley. I see Dulwich are coming slowly forward as well. So interesting from that. So many teams, one, two, three, four in the playoffs, isn't it? So, Dulwich seem to be the side in form. Billericay have gone off the levels there. But Chatham with the gates they're getting, you can see them doing well and competing in the next level above. It's just if they can get the right results in the playoffs. If can see no reason why they can't win the playoffs. Because clearly they're the second best team in the division.
Absolutely. And as I said to him there, you know, he's got a bit of a luxury now in that, you know, it's going to take quite a lot for them not to finish in second place and have that home advantage in the playoffs, which is going to be massive for them anyway. So he can look after his players, especially when you've got Chris Dixon, Danny Kedwell still in around there who, you know, are very effective, but they're not getting any younger. But also, you know, I would call it much maligned because we say it's ridiculous. But I think this Velocity Trophy is actually going to be a big help for Chatham because it gives them a massively competitive game when they could otherwise be running down, feet up, we're going to finish second. And I think that's going to be a big help for them.
When is that? When have they got in that final?
They've got hashtag United and I believe it's on the 17th of April at Avery. Right. I may have just plucked that date from nowhere.
Good old hashtag again.
Yeah,
they're going to be the bane of my life, aren't they, soon?
Yeah, absolutely. But I actually think, you know, having that cup final is going to help them out. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I would have thought that would be a good one as well. Win a trophy. There's no reason why they can't beat hashtag United. I think that keeps them, for the next 3 weeks, players will want to play in the cup final. So then the season finishes at what? A week after that, then you're straight into the playoffs. So yeah, it keeps the legs ticking over. Right, got to be ready for that, and then go from there. And cup football, because that's what they'd have to do as well. Clearly, they've had a good season, cup wise in that competition against sides in their division. So maybe this will be the way forward for them to go, just get in the habit of playing cup football because that's what they need to do. So a very, very interesting season awaits. Well, next 6 weeks awaits for them. Did you think they would be at the top of the table this season or get in the playoffs?
I thought they'd be top half. I think I'm mightily impressed with the way they've got it. They just had a good start and they were very clever. I don't know if you remember, Matt, but right at the start of the season, I think it might have been because they were knocked out of the FA Cup, but they moved a couple of fixtures forward and didn't play them at Christmas. And, you know, they brought some games forward and played them, won them. So they were always at the top. And I think that actually that league position that they kind of got into, just kind of stuck with. And I think that was very clever of them to be proactive on that front and make the most of what could have been a free weekend to find a game they could play. And I think they've just built the momentum and gone on and on from there. And you know, as you said, he said about the COVID. I actually think Chatham played COVID brilliantly, if you think about it. Obviously, they were near the top of the scaffold when the season was curtailed 4 years ago due to COVID. But then they did that the tournament, didn't they? We weren't allowed to call it a cup. They did the tournament that we sponsored. And it got people going to football. It got people going to watch Chatham. You know, nearly all the games in that tournament were played at Chatham. They got people through the door. They'd done the work around the stadium. And I think that really helped to put them on the map even more than they already were. And I think, you know, they've just built on that and it's just been non-stop ever since. That the progress they have made has been phenomenal. You know, I mean, you look at that title race with Sheppey when they thankfully both got promoted at the end of it was brilliant. And then to go on and progress like they did last season was superb. And then they've just kept on going this season. And, you know, the world is their oyster. As you say, they're getting big crowds in. We've seen clubs rise up through. Look at Dorking Wanderers. I wouldn't say Dorking Wanderers are a bigger club than Chatham.
No.
And they've risen all the way up to the National League. And do you know what? There's no reason why Chatham can't do that. They're getting crowds in. He's hoping next season they'll be playing on alternate weekends at home to Gillingham, which will help their crowds even more. And people will want to go and watch them because they're successful. They play good football. They've scored 100 goals this season. It's a win-win, isn't it?
I think it's a massive win-win for them. Probably they what they've done to get the crowds in. I remember 200 they were getting. So just if you run the club well and want people to come and are successful, you can do it. I think people said, oh, people won't go to football after COVID. You look at their gates, they're only going one way, which is up as well. So they just worked it really well. And I never thought I'd say it, maybe Medway is a hotbed of football, John, as well. When you think Gillingham as well, people want to watch it, watch the football. They want to enjoy their Saturday afternoon. So you can see where it goes. So, yeah, fair play to them. So it'll be an unbelievable achievement. We're going to lose a side in Conference South. It'd be great if one of them could be replaced by another Kent side.
Yes, at the other end of the table, there was a huge win for Margate on Tuesday night as they closed the gap to safety with a 1-0 win at Cheshunt. A defeat there would almost certainly have been fatal for their hopes of staying up. Even despite the win, the gap is still 7 points, but they have some confidence after a rare win, as it's proven. Quite a week as well for new signing Destiny Oladipo. The striker signed from Dover, sent off for 2 yellow cards inside 4 minutes on his debut in the 1-1 draw with Enfield on Saturday. But they came off the bench 7 minutes later, scored the winner at Cheshunt. You've obviously seen them a bit, Matt. They described him as hard-working, which I'd always say is a code for not going to score a lot of goals. But he scored that goal, and that could be crucial.
Yeah, he'll put himself around, and he did well to get sent off after 4 minutes. I have to say, 2 yellow cards.
I haven't
seen the video back, but again, referee normally gives a little bit of leeway for the first 10. So
how was your debut, Destiny? Well, it didn't go that well, to be honest with you.
No, yeah. Maybe you should have looked into that. But no. It's a massive. They had to win that Margate against Chesham, didn't they? So it's still going to be tight for them. And I think they need a few more wins, but you never know. That could be start something for a good Easter. 7 points clear, make it 8 with a goal difference. But yeah, it's going to be tough for Margate, I think. But
I suppose if they're going to go down, you want to go down fighting. Yeah,
and exactly,
they haven't been doing that. Because they've just been losing every week. So to get that win, you know, I'm sure Margate fans, well, I know Margate fans would be devastated if they were to be relegated coming into the season. But if they're relegated after winning 5 of their remaining games, then at least there's something positive to cling on to next season. It's the same for Dover. You know, Dover are going down on Friday. I'm sorry to break it to you that way. But if Dover were then to win 4 of their remaining games, you'd go into next season thinking, well, do you know what? We've gone down, but look at how we finished. We can compete. And I think that would be the same for Margate. So just finish the season strongly. And if your best isn't good enough from here, then so be it. The damage is already done. But just win as many games as you can between now and then. At least send the fans who are going to be devastated home with a little glimmer of hope.
I don't know what you've been smoking, John. With Dover, haven't won 4 games all season if they can do that. But I'll take that now. But
I've been vaping, yeah. Mate. That's the thing.
I think, yeah, it's how... For Margate, if they go down, you know, well, they've seen Ramsgate do this season. They will be massive favourites to come up if they get it right off the pitch as well. But Margate have had their issues as well, haven't they? Which is a bit of a concern previously. So I think, again, get back. If Margate can pick up at least 4 points over the Easter period, it gives them a chance.
Absolutely. Folkestone were 1-0 winners at Cray Wanderers in Sunday's game. Those two sides, 15th and 16th. That's not going to live long in the memory for either club, is it, this season? Cray at home to Chatham on Good Friday, as we've already heard. Folkestone at home to Lewis. Margate go to Potter's Bar on Saturday. Then the Easter Monday Jamboree sees Chatham take on Kingstonian. Folkestone head to Hastings and Margate take on Cray Wanderers. Last week, Matt said that maybe the Isthmian League South East title race had taken a turn after Cray Valley's emphatic win at Beckenham gave them a goal difference advantage. Well, Ramsgate must have been listening to the show as they then responded by walloping Lancing 7-2 to close it back up, while the Millers kept up their end of the bargain with a 2-0 win over Hythe. Cray now 1 point ahead, 1 goal behind, with 7 games to play, including that blockbuster in 2 weeks' time at Southwood. It's not getting any clearer, this, is it?
No, is it? When is it? It's the 13th, isn't it? Yeah, 13th, two weeks' time. Yeah, so it's not getting any clearer. Fair play to Ramsgate. We mentioned about the goal difference being crucial. They soon wiped that out. 87 goals this season. When I saw it, Cray scoring too late, you're thinking, oh, here we go again. So, right, John, I don't know who they've got over the Ramsgate got Sittingbourne. I know one game.
Ramsgate got Sittingbourne on Monday. They've got Littlehampton away on Friday. Cray Valley have got Broadbridge Heath away on Saturday and Sevenoaks at home on Monday.
Again, Ramsgate probably on paper, well, on paper, tough one against Sittingbourne, but maybe that Ramsgate, I see Ben Smith came out and said, oh, some people have sort of said it was all over and criticising his team and they bounced back in style. So what we want, John, is when they play each other, it's a...
9-0. To be the,
sorry?
9-0.
9-0. We want them to play 9-0 when they play each other, but we want it to go. It means so much. So
yeah.
Not somebody has gone clear. So if they can all win all their games to that point, it will be a fantastic occasion down at Southwood. And may the best team win. And from this position, may the best team win. So, yeah. Again, we're going to have twists and turns. And we could, when we record this show next week, it could be one side looks like they're going to win it. But hopefully they can win all their games between now and then and make that an absolute occasion when they play each other on the 13th.
Absolutely. Elsewhere, Sittingbourne 3-2 winners at Beckenham on Saturday. Phoenix Sports went down 3-1 at Broadbridge Heath. Sheffield lost 2-0 at Chichester. Erith and Belvedere beaten 2-1 at Horndean. Sevenoaks won by the same score at Herne Bay. And Ashford lost out 3-2 at Three Bridges. But Herne Bay bounced back on Tuesday night with a 3-1 win at Soggy Hythe to move within 3 points of the top five. Sheffield United were supposed to be playing at Horndean on Tuesday night. That one was called off at 7:05 as well. Apparently, the referee, both managers wanted to play, but the referee said that he didn't think that the pitch was playable. Echoes of the Littlehampton against Sittingbourne game a few weeks ago, and we've already talked about it earlier on in the show. Just need a bit of common sense to save people having to make a 100-mile round trip, as Sheffield United would have had to do on Tuesday night. Three games on Friday. Ramsgate head to Littlehampton, Sittingbourne at home to Horndean there at 1:00. And Sevenoaks host Ashford at 3:00. On Saturday, Cray Valley travel to Broadbridge Heath. Erith and Belvedere at home to Burgess Hill. Herne Bay at home to East Grinstead. Hythe meet Merstham. It's Phoenix Sports against Sheppey and Beckenham head to Three Bridges. Ashford then host Herne Bay on Monday. There's a big 6 points at the bottom for Beckenham as they host Phoenix Sports. Cray Valley at home to Sevenoaks. Erith and Belvedere go to East Grinstead. Ramsgate, as Matt has already said, meet Sittingbourne. And it's Sheppey United against Hythe Town. We've got new leaders in the scaffold, but in actual fact, Deal Town taking over at the top after beating Wellington 1-0 on Tuesday. Probably not the biggest story during the rounds. The Hoops have beaten Glebe 4-2 on Saturday, and that, very surprisingly, proved to be the final game for their bosses Craig Nelson and Danny Oakins, who've left the club. We spoke to Craig last week. Didn't see that one coming. Plenty of rumours going around, including over who will take charge for the rest of the season. No announcements just yet. But it was actually a huge day for Glebe on Tuesday as well. A confirmation that they've had the go-ahead to put down a 3G pitch at Foxbury Avenue, which will be in use for next season, hopefully done in September. And sources close to the club say that that's the big news they want to get out there this week. But it's a funny old week, isn't it?
What, how long have they been the managers there for?
Since the start of the season. Were they there the back end of last season? I've read 68 games they're taking charge of. Right. So... But yeah,
it seems harsh looking from the outside. Again, losing to Deal is not, you know, nothing disgrace in this league in a big game. But we knew Deal had the games in hand, so it was going to be tough for them to win the league, even if they probably won that game against them. So, yeah, clearly something's going on behind the scenes and a new manager is going to be appointed. Maybe who knows this level. Looking at the league table, they should... you know, they want to keep their playoff spot, which they should easily do. Yeah, interesting. Maybe somebody in to write, forget about the league, let's try and do it from the playoffs. So, yeah, a little bit strange one, that, I thought. But nothing surprises in football. How many managerial changes we had this season?
Enough.
Too many, nearly every week.
No, exactly. And Faversham this week have signed two players who've just left Ashford, Bradley Sims and Tariq Asai, to add more to their battle for the playoffs as well. And all the while, Deal Town just keep on winning. I make it now that they need 16 points in total to win the league. It'll be 13 if three of those points come when they play Corinthian, who are the only team who can get more than, I think it's 85 points now at the top of that table. And Deal Town, you know, they bounce back from their FA Vars heartbreak superbly. They just keep on winning. You know, and they're doing a great job. But and you know, it looks like from here they've got 10 games to play. They're level on points with the team below them. They've got 6 games in hand on. It's deals to lose from here, isn't it?
Well, yeah, again, I think they would be six games in hand, and they are top of the table. So, you cannot see them throwing this away. I'm sure Steve King is probably playing it game by game, which is probably the best way to do it. So the only issue is the games if they catch up with them, but I don't think they will. I think they've got a big enough squad, and they can see the light at the end of the tunnel, which would be a phenomenal achievement for them to win this division. But they've been a club going in the right direction over the last few years, and maybe it's Deal's turn. And
I think what they've done is they've not tried to run before they can walk. You know, yeah. I think they've built it the right way, and you know they're reaping the rewards of it. And we've seen it with other clubs. You know, Corinthian did really well. They did a similar thing. They progressed up the league slowly and surely, built a strong team, and it's almost like Deal using that template now.
Well, I think again, yeah. From what people I've spoken to, people I know in Deal have said it's a bit of a buzz around the town, or everybody enjoys going to the game. You can have a few beers. It's a good atmosphere. So, yeah, I think they'll be absolutely delighted of how it's gone and what an achievement would be. I think at the start of the season, we all thought Faversham were going to win it. Deal kept their pencil dry, didn't they? But I think Steve King was quietly confident. And, this will be a big shock if they don't win it from here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Plenty else going on in the scaffold. And unfortunately, not all of it is positive either, with games abandoned in both the Premier and Division and First Division on Saturday. Snodden had four red cards shown to players and two for the bench, with their match at home to Tunbridge Wells was cut short near the end at 0-0. While AFC Whiteleaf reported their games abandoned due to issues with the Bride and Ropes coaching staff being on the pitch, although that tweet has now been deleted. AFC Whiteleaf were 3-1 up at the time of that one and late on. We put in a couple of bids for referee representatives to come and join us on this week's show, but sadly we had no joy. And what I'm about to say has got nothing at all to do with any of those games at the weekend. I know people at Snodland who I'll get on with, same at Bride and Ropes, and I'm not passing any comment at all on what's happened there. I wasn't at either of those games. I don't know anything about what's happened. But generally speaking, I have a bit of a fear for the future. As it seems to me that match officials and respect for match officials is very much on the way out. And do you know what? It starts at the very, very top. And I'm going to lay the blame, part of the blame, at Mr. Jurgen Klopp, who's only too happy to come out after any game and slate any referee who makes a decision that he doesn't agree with. And that filters down. You know, social media doesn't help either. Every decision is scrutinised to the nth degree. You know, you've got fan tribalism. You know, you'll see a Liverpool fan saying that was a bad decision, a Man United fan saying it was a great decision because it's gone the way of their team. You know, and everyone's saying, you know, all I see on social media is people criticising referees. You never see any positives about it. And you know, we want every decision to be correct. Of course we do. But match officials are only human. And my worry is that down the line, people won't want to take up refereeing. And when we've got no match officials, we won't have any games of football. And, you know, you see things about people at youth games getting abused by parents and supporters at games. You're seeing it, you know, and I just worry, Matt, that I appreciate that people, it's a passionate game, and that, you know, people's livelihoods are on the line and things like that. But ultimately, the referees are doing their absolute best, aren't they? And I'm just worried, Matt, because we've spoken far too much this season and the last couple of seasons about games being abandoned for various reasons. And, you know, I think a lot of it, and late postponements, and referees come under fire for that as well. And in some cases, rightly so. But I just don't want to get to a stage whereby they're scrabbling around trying to get referees. I know that there were big issues, and I don't think I'm breaking a confidence myself, but I know there were big issues a few years ago when we had a block of like sorry teams in the First Division, a Chessington and Hook and others like that. And there was a real problem with getting referees to go and referee those games because of the distances involved. And we don't want to get into that situation whereby we can't get games of football on at step 5 and step 6 because there's not enough people willing to basically have their parentage questioned, their eyesight questioned, and be sworn at all afternoon.
It is difficult. I think why would anybody want to be a referee? So that's probably one of the issues they're going to have, the next generation who want to go through. If you see it, what's gone on in the last few weeks, again, we don't need to know what the game's being called off. People aren't going to get involved and think, right, I've got better things to do on my Saturday than getting involved in that. So, yeah, it's a big issue, and it'll be interesting to get somebody from a referee perspective, or the Kent FA, of how the issue with refereeing is it a concern? So yeah, like everything in the game, John, it probably does filter down from the top.
I'm sure there are some refs that aren't very good, but at least they're doing it. Do you know what I mean? And I've been to a few games, actually. I think it was Faversham against Deal when I went to just before, in between Christmas and New Year. And I thought that game was refereed superbly. I thought the referee was really good, because I was stood on quite near the touchline, and I could hear him talking to the players and communicating his decisions and everything like that, you know. And I see a lot of youngsters running the line and stuff as well at these games. And I hope that they carry on and get involved in refereeing further down the line, and that they want to get involved and do this and you know, make the most of it and get involved. But and I would say, let's be honest, 99 times out of 100, there's no issues. The game goes by. Yeah, there'll be some contentious decisions here and there. A throw-in goes the wrong way, a corner, maybe an offside goal or whatever like that. But 99 times out of 100, the game is friendly. And unfortunately, it's the ones that don't end up like that end up hitting headlines. We haven't talked about referees all season, and then we've had two games abandoned this weekend, so now we're talking about it. And that's the problem. That's why I say we really wanted to get someone on to talk about it from a referee's perspective this week, but we weren't able to tie anyone down, so to speak. But for me, I think most of the referees do a great job. And yeah, no one's going to be perfect. Decisions are going to be made wrong. But when everyone sees players and managers at the very top level remonstrating like we see on the TV week in, week out, it's going to filter down.
It's like, again, pressure as well. These teams, you know, after a long, hard season, I understand that, you know, you've had a long, hard season and you want to get promoted and you want to do this and you feel things going against you. But you just maybe just got to think about it and step back and work together, really, both sides there. We just don't want it abandoned. It does not look a good factor on the league, I don't think. And the Kent FA must be really disappointed about this. And I'm sure they must be struggling to get referees to go through the levels. So, but I do appreciate it. It's a difficult job being a referee.
Absolutely. No, I'm not taking it on. I'm quite happy just standing in.
So again, exactly. People, yeah, it's a difficult one. Is there 15, 16-year-olds wanting to be a referee? I honestly don't know.
No. Let's look at the results in the scaffold on Saturday. Then it was Bearsted 0, VC Athletic 0. Deal Town were 4-2 winners over Glebe. Whitstable Town 1-0 win at Erith Town. If ended Faversham 2, Rustall 2. Three red cards for Faversham, including one that they described as harsh. But the victim of this, Danny Powell, the Rustall striker, showed a picture that suggested it perhaps wasn't the harshest red card in the world. He's had to have some surgery, a lot of stitches, and has set up a crowdfunder, in fact, because he's going to be off work for a while after being on the end of a pretty robust challenge in that game. Corinthian were 2-1 winners at Holmesdale, and Kennington 1, Fisher 1, Punjab United 2, Lordswood 3, Stansfield 0, Hollandson Blair 4, and Welling Town there. Their new look, their new resistance, they lost 7-0 at home to Lidtown. Mitch Brundle among the scorers there, Matt, and Jack Shonk as well, got two late goals for Lidtown. It may be a name you're not familiar with, but apparently scored bagfuls of goals for, I think it was Bexhill, over in Sussex before moving to Lid to finish off the season. Tuesday night, Deal Town 1-0 winners over Welling Town, as just said, 493 there on Tuesday night. It was Erith Town 2, Holmesdale 1, and the game between Tunbridge Wells and Bearsted was postponed. And there is a game on at the moment into the closing stages. It's Punjab United 0, Hollands and Blair 0. On Friday, we have a cup final in the scaffold. It's the Scaffold Challenge Cup. A 1 o'clock kickoff at Hollands and Blair, and Corinthian will meet Erith Town in that game. Two sides battling for the playoffs as well. So that should be a good game at Hollands and Blair. If you've got nothing to do on Good Friday, come along and say hello to me, because I'm going to be there watching that, because I've got nothing to do on Good Friday other than go and watch Corinthian against Erith Town. Why not? On Saturday, it's Deal Town against Sutton Athletic. Holmesdale take on Punjab. Lidtown against Tunbridge Wells. Stansfield against VCD. Stodland Town against Lordswood. And Whitstable against Rustall. And then on Monday, Corinthian against Stansfield. Fisher against Holmesdale. Glebe against Punjab United. Hollands and Blair take on Faversham. It's Lidtown against Kennington. Rustall against Erith Town. Snobden Town against Bearsted, VCD against Sutton Athletic, Welling Town against Tunbridge Wells, and Whitstable Town against Deal Town. And that just leaves with the Scaffold First Division, where the top of the table remains, well, it's AFC Whiteleaf to lose, I'd say, from here still. They are 8 points clear, with six games left to play for them. Staples Monarchs are the team behind them. They've got a game in hand. Larkfield and New Hythe may still think they've got a chance. They've got three games in hand. They are 15 points behind Whiteleaf. So Whiteleaf would need to have quite the blip from there. The results in that division on Saturday. It finished Faversham Strike Force 2, Rochester United 0. A couple of red cards in that one. Loads of red cards in that, at that very stadium on non-league day, with Faversham having three sent off later on in the afternoon. It finished FC Armstead 0, Staples Monarchs 1. K-Sports beaten 3-1 by Croydon. Matt Day with another hat-trick as Larkfield and New Hythe drew 3-3 with SC Thamesmead. Lewisham Borough 1, Meridian VP 1. Tooting Brook 4-2 winners over Greenways. And there's a First Division game tonight as well, which is currently Croydon 1, FC Elmstead 0. At the fixtures in the First Division over the weekend. On Saturday, we've got Canterbury against Greenways, FC Elmstead against Tooting Beck, Larkfield and New Hythe against Staples Monarchs, Rochester United against AFC Whiteleaf, FC Thamesmead against Croydon. And we've got some games on Monday as well. Croydon against AFC Whiteleaf, Faversham Strike Force against K-Sports, Larkfield and New Hythe against Lewisham Borough, Rochester United against Meridian VP, Tooting Beck against SC Thamesmead, and Forest Hill Park play at home to FC Elmstead on Wednesday. And Matt, I also missed one out. Deal, so many games have to play. They've got one on Wednesday night as well. They're at home to Lordswood. They could be, if they can win those three games this week, Matt, they're on the brink.
On the brink, yeah. Kingy will be enjoying his half-term holiday, won't he, as well? So, exciting times ahead for Deal.
Absolutely. That brings you all up to date with all of the football. What are your plans for Easter? Are you going to go and see the big fella over the weekend?
I probably will go to church on Sunday, yeah. So, for that, well, Mark Cessley have got no football for the first time in months. So, we might go to London for the day. Monday, I'm not working, so we've got family do. So, on that, yeah, it's just, again, nice not to be at work, a few days off. And then I'm off a couple of days next week as well. So, yeah, all good. All good at the moment. All exciting stuff. And just waiting for the weather to improve a little bit.
Absolutely. Well, I've got a few days. In fact, I'm only working 3 days between now and the week on Sunday. So I've got a little bit of a run of days off as well. So I've got, I'm off Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday next week. So I know what to do with myself. I'm sure Fee will be kicking me out of the house, to be honest. making sure I take my coach with me as well.
That's the most important thing, yes.
Absolutely. I don't want to be cold when I'm outside on the streets, do I? But yeah, so we've got a few plans and stuff. And so I'm going to the cup final on Friday. I might sneak out to a game on Saturday as well, depending on how my weekend's playing out. But yeah, it's just it's exciting times, isn't it? That when you get to this stage of the season, Matt, you can't beat it.
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, it's quite, I think this season, yeah, really, what, 5-6 games to go, two of those games over the weekend now. Again, everything will be a little bit clearer after the weekend. I'm just hoping that Ramsgate and Cray keep on winning. I'm hoping that Dover win, but still get relegated. So from that point of view.
Well, at least you're away on Friday, which does significantly increase the chances of a Gerrard win.
A home team win a league game. Like, it is a long time. I think when I go through my fixtures at the end of the season, I was going to try and work that out. But yeah, I haven't seen a home win for a long time. But it could be good. And I haven't seen Dover win away from home in 4.5 years. So that would be good if they get wet. But having seen Welling, I would say it will be a tough ask for that. And I'm going to get an awful catch up with friend of the show, Nigel, on Wednesday as well, on Friday as well. So looking forward to that. But as he sort of rubs it in when Dover get relegated. So there you go.
There was a thing, actually, Matt. Your fame is spreading. There's a guy, I think his name's Aaron. He's a Folkestone fan who was basically pleading on Twitter for you to come along to watch them because he desperately needed an away win on Sunday. He was like, can Matt come and watch us on Sunday? Didn't actually need you because they won 1-0 anyway.
Yeah, good result again. Did a good job there, Andy Drury as well, Folkestone. So Folkestone and Cray, again, waiting for the end of the season. And I'm sure there'll be big changes at both clubs, particularly with Cray when they move to the new ground. So, again, they'll be our rivals next season, John. So, again, Dover's record against Folkestone when they've been in the same league is not particularly good. So, Folkestone will be rubbing their hands with that as well. So,
I'm gonna put my neck on the line here, and I'm gonna suggest that's where you'll be playing on Boxing Day.
Yeah, I would have thought so, but again, that could be the case. Boxing Day and probably Easter or August Bank Holiday Monday. So, yes. And I expect, probably a win for the for Invicta. I've got to get
the thing is, down. He's already down. Given up on next season, and we're not even finished this one yet. Unbelievable scenes. I'm thinking, Matt, did you watch Blue Lights when it was on?
Yeah, I did. We just saw advertisers coming back. And that's probably the only programme.
I have to try again because I tried to watch it and I couldn't really get into it. I think I'm going to have to try again and because I think it's going to be quite hotly anticipated, this new series of it. But, you know, I'm, again, not really watching much at all. I'm just having background stuff on. Do you know what I mean? Stuff that's easy to watch while I'm busy doing other things, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's nothing too exciting on the moment. Again, it's 9:30 in a minute. I'm going to go to bed and just wait for something to come up. No, again, I might watch Barbie over the weekend because that's come on. I know I've seen it. My wife hasn't, so that might be watching. Make me even smaller as a man.
How did you end up going to Barbie without your wife?
She didn't want to. So it was something on, so I took the kids. So on that time back in the day, so I think I might watch it now, and I can feel less of a man than I did the first time with watching it as well again. So yeah, apart from that, so yeah, just we'll get through tomorrow, and then it's a nice few days off. So that's the main thing.
Oh, to be fair, tomorrow night you've got Taskmaster is back for the 17th series, which hopefully will be better than the last one, which I didn't enjoy.
Anybody famous in who's in this one? I would.
So you have got Nathan Shelley, Nate the Great.
Oh, Nate the Great, yeah.
He's on it. Steve Pemberton from Inside Number Nine.
Oh yeah, I've got Inside Number Nine.
There's an Irish girl who I'm not familiar with called Joanne, and another lady whose name I forget, and a guy called John Robbins who does a lot of stuff with Ellis James. So it should be a good series. I think it's going to be really good, and I know that this is clever intel. I read a thing on Reddit months ago, I'm talking before Christmas, when they were doing the studio recordings of this series of Taskmaster, and Steve Pemberton does cryptic crosswords for, I think, The Guardian under a pseudonym, right? And he had done a crossword one day, and if you read the answers down in the thing, it said, "Greg, please give Steve all 5 points."
All right.
So that's going to be an unbelievable studio. It's going to be the prize task at the start, isn't it? It's going to be like, what it is, and it literally that, you know, I know for a fact that is going to be on it. But brilliant, absolute genius. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the task is that brings that as a response.
Well, again, these comedians are always very clever, aren't they? So
yeah, I think that's why I never made it.
Yeah, manic depressants and clever. So there you go. on that note.
Yeah, let's
present on Friday. That will be it.
Yeah, thank you, Captain Hindsight. Always appreciated to get to the end of term, and we can all break up. A quick shout out to a regular listener of ours, Dave. Just thought I'd say hello, seeing as he was enjoying listening to us on the tube the other day, and passed on a note about that. MasterChef's also back next week, Matt. If you want to get into the TV, that's always
fell up. No.
Okay. Well, I'm trying. I'm trying, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. No. Anytime with Greg Wallace is not part of mine.
Well, you can always relive his Saturdays with him, though. That was one of the best.
Yeah, yes, I did see that thing.
God, that was interesting. So I'm going to go. What was it? Someone said he spends more time with the non-verbal autistic child he didn't want. He spends more time with that playing make-up war games on a Saturday. After he's had his big breakfast at the Harvester. Hello, Greg, if you're listening. Anyway, you can find us on Twitter at KentNL Podcast, or X, whatever you want to call it. You can find us on Facebook, search for Kent Nonley Podcast. Also search and join the group Kent Nonley Football Chat. You can also find us on Threads and Instagram at Kent Nonley Podcast. I'm at John Phipps 81. Matt is at Matthew_Gerald. Thank you, everybody, for listening to us this week. And thank you to our guests for their time. Really, really great interviews, those. Especially with Damien and Kevin, who I spoke to literally. When you listen, if you've listened back to the show and you're wondering what that noise was at the start of the chat with Damien, that was Kevin Haight calling me and me having to turn down the call. That's how close together those interviews were carried out earlier on this afternoon. But yeah, we do really, really appreciate everybody listening. Thank you so much. Have a lovely Easter. Whatever you're bringing, have a leg of lamb and as many chocolate eggs as you can stuff in your face. You're allowed to this weekend. It's fine to cheat. I hope you all have a lovely Easter. Enjoy the football, whatever game you're at. And we'll speak to you all next week on the Kent Nonley Podcast.
Yeah. Happy Easter. And if you are watching the Dover game and you see a grown man crying and thinking, what are we doing? Please treat me with kindness.